Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. It's Tuesday, February 25th, 2014, and I'm here in Clearwater, Florida. And today we're going to be talking about late winter seed starting for spring and summer harvest. Now, here in Florida, in the southern part of the United States, it's actually almost springtime. My azaleas, I have outside, I sit right here where I'm doing the radio show. I sit in my office, which has 17 feet of windows, great big windows, looking out in my garden where there are big oak trees. And so I'm kind of understory all these oak trees and azaleas. And azaleas in the south, in the spring, azaleas are it. I mean, it's just this big extravaganza of azaleas. And I'm starting to get the first azaleas coming out right outside my window. And so I'm watching them day by day. Here's one pops out and then another one pops out. And so it really is starting to be spring here. But I understand that some of you are probably still digging out the snow. And spring will come in different parts of the country at different times, but we're going to be talking about how you can start seeds now for spring and summer harvest. So my guest today is Diane Dirks. She's a 40-year organic gardener, certified permaculture designer, agricultural and gardening consultant, edible environment planner, an expert in raised bed and food forest gardening, soil composting for food and herb growing, and a homesteader. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Deborah.
You have lots of qualifications to be here. Before we talk about starting seeds, I got an article this morning from Rodale Press that I want to talk about because it ties in with your subject. And the title of it is called 10 Crazy Things Pesticides Are Doing to Your Body. That's 10 crazy things pesticides are doing to your body. And you can, I'm sure, just enter that into Google and you'll come up with the article. It's a very long and detailed article, but I highly recommend that people read this. I'm going to tell you what the 10, there's actually nine health problems associated with pesticide-based agrochemicals. So this is a reason why you want to grow your own, because if you're not paying attention to eliminating these pesticides from your life, you're eating them. The first one is food allergies. The second one is memory loss, diabetes. Number four is cancer. Number five is autism and other developmental diseases. Number six is obesity. Then number seven is Parkinson's disease. Number eight is infertility. And number nine is birth defects. I'm here, just number 10. At the top it said nine. Number 10 is Alzheimer's disease. And they really have the latest information about what how pesticides are affecting us. So if you're not familiar with Rodale Press, Rodale was one of the leaders in organic gardening and farming information many, many years ago. I don't even know, maybe before I was born, in the 40s or 50s or something like that. And they publish Organic Gardening magazine, and they know a lot about organic gardening. So they're keeping track of all this. If you want to go read this article, it not only gives you details about the studies that connect pesticides with these illnesses, but it also tells you what you can do to lessen your exposure to pesticides in your daily life. Okay, Diane. Your turn. I just had to get that in there. 10 crazy things pesticides are doing to your body.
No, that ties in with everything that you do, because this is very critical. One of the biggest reasons why you have to grow your own food, if you want food security, it isn't just having enough food, it's having food that isn't making you sick.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, we think of food as being something that is benign and something that we need for nourishment, and it is. But today's foods are so laden with toxic chemicals that if you aren't consciously buying the ones or growing your own that don't have these toxic chemicals, we're getting a big onslaught of very dangerous, poisonous chemicals in our food supply.
I'll tell you something I know about that. There was some research done a few years ago where they took blood samples all across the country of every strata of civilization and every area of the country, and they discovered that 100% of the blood samples that they took had Roundup in them. Now, mm-hmm. Roundup is accumulative in the body, and it's been linked to a lot of autoimmune, and I'm sure that, you know, if you've done any research on this, you know that that's one of the reasons why we don't want to eat GMO food, is because GMO food doesn't grow without this particular herbicide, and it's one of the big reasons why there was that big struggle in California last year about having GMOs labeled, because it's making people sick, and the only way that you can for sure ensure that you're not getting that stuff in your body is that you're growing your own food and you know exactly what you're putting into the soil and you know what you're using to give it fertility and all that other stuff.
Yes, I totally agree. It just seems like across the boards that we really, as individuals, and need to take responsibility for knowing what is in everything we eat, drink, put on our skin, breathe, etc., because the chemicals are out there. And I don't want that to sound too overwhelming, because I know that can sound like a big statement, but if you just take things one at a time, then, I mean, I've been doing this for more than 30 years, and on the first day I started doing it, I only had, just took care of one thing, one chemical. I didn't even know about all these chemicals. I just did what I could figure out, and gradually over time, I've made enough difference in my life that my health has improved tremendously, my ability to think, the amount of hours I have to work in the day because of my energy levels, all these things have improved since I decided to eliminate toxic chemicals from my life. So, Diane, tell us just for a couple of minutes about your background in gardening. How did you get interested in gardening? And tell us about your experience.
Well, I think I was 3 years old when my mother took me by the hand and took me out to the backyard in South Bend, Indiana, when I was a little girl. And she said, this little 3x3 foot place in the garden is now your garden. And so she, you know, she showed me how to dig it up, and we put, she gave me seeds, and she showed me how to put them into the ground. And I had my first garden when I was about 3 years old. And it was, and then this is a woman who came from a pioneering family who knew all the pioneering skills. So over my lifetime with her, until I was 19 when she passed away, she passed on everything she could to me about survival as a pioneer woman. And also how to preserve food, grow food, you know, everything. We had, I think we probably had the only garden in our whole neighborhood in Michigan that had kept all the wildflowers. In fact, the neighborhood that
I love that.
Yeah, it was so cool. My father had his own business, and he was quite affluent. And so we built our own home in this very affluent area along where there was a creek bed. And they were digging up all these, the woods and everything, and just throwing the plants in a trash pile. And so my mother and I went into the woods before the bulldozers got in there, and we salvaged as many as of the Trillium and the Jack in the Pulpit and all these. Now they're considered rare, you know. They're mm-hmm. they're surviving. They're having trouble keeping them in the woods because people are going and taking them out of the woods. But at that time, we were salvaging them, and we had a garden in the front of our house that had them. And I just grew up that way. And
yeah.
So later, as I became an adult, I just kept that up. And 4 years ago, I took a permaculture course. But I had been, actually, you said that I had been gardening for 40 years. I've been an organic gardener for 45 years.
Oh, and, I think I said that.
That's okay. You know, it's kind of a moot point. Who cares? 5 years. but I've grown food and, you know, gardens in just about every kind of zone, mm-hmm. growing zone. And right now I don't have a very large lot. I have 0.7 acres with a third of it in woods that it was, you know, we're leaving as a natural zone. And in that garden, and it's on a very steep hillside, and I have over 90 garden beds there, and what's called a food forest, which is a it's an orchard that has all kinds of things growing underneath the trees.
And we'll talk about that after the break. We need to take a break. I want to hear about your food forest because I love food forests. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Diane Dirks. And we're talking about late winter seed starting for spring and summer harvest, as well as all other kinds of interesting things about organic gardening. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. Today, my guest is Diane Dirks, and she's a 45-year organic gardener and certified permaculture designer and all kinds of experience with gardening. And we're talking about late winter seed starting for spring and summer harvest. And you know what? Diane sent me some questions, and they were here, and I can't find them. I closed the window.
One of the first ones we wanted to talk about is it's cold in most of the country.
Right. Can you start a garden before the snow is gone and the soil is still frozen?
Absolutely. But you're not going to do it in the soil. You're going to have to start those seeds in another environment that's warmer. And that means, you know, you're going to have to plant them in little pots or seed cells. You know, you go to the nursery and you find those little plastic units that have maybe four or six or nine little plants in them. Those are called seed cells. And you have to start them in that because you have to give the seed some place to begin, and then you can later transplant that into a larger pot. But you don't know how many of your seeds are going to actually germinate because, you know, a certain percentage is not going to germinate. Sometimes you get lucky and you get all of them germinating, but that's not usually the case. So you have to start them in something, and then you put them in a warm environment, and there are several places that you can get seeds started. There's such a thing as a cold frame, which is just a low-lying box with windows or glass over the top of it outside. Uh-huh. You can put a 100-watt bulb in there or something and warm it up a little bit without a big expense for a heater and all that. Or you can take a liter plastic soda bottle and cut it in half and cut four slits in the top part and put dirt in the bottom with some holes in it and put your plant in there and then just fit the top back over it and put it out in the sunshine someplace. That's called winter sowing. And you can actually start tomatoes, which don't tolerate cold. But if you put them in a little protected spot where they're not going to get a lot of cold from the wind or anything, they'll germinate. I did that 2 years ago. They did just fine. There are these things called tunnels, which are basically either a plastic or a wire, kind of a rod that's in a shape of a curve, you know, and you put plastic over the top of that and lay your plastic over that and plant your seeds underneath there in pots or, you know, in the ground, but it's probably better in some kind of a container that's slightly insulated or whatever. And the heat from the sun will keep the warmth under there. But usually you need to have two layers of plastic. That's usually what I'm being told. I haven't done that so much as I have another way I do it, which is I have in the ground, but I have lots of insulation around my beds. My beds are surrounded by maybe 4-inch deep pathways of wood chips. And then I take my tomato cages, which I use in the summer, and lay them on their side and drape plastic over the top of that. And it works great. I grow things year-round, and my winter crops are just, in fact, I've got kale and all kinds of stuff growing out there. And it's been, you know, really cold this winter. So that's a really inexpensive way to go. Or you can have, you know, spend a bunch of money and have a heated greenhouse. There's something else called a cloche. A cloche is like a bell-shaped glass.
I love cloches. I think they're so beautiful.
They protect they're heavy enough that they protect against the wind and the cold and everything. And you can make those actually. I think the use of the we talked about using a liter plastic soda bottle to act as a little plant holder, but you can also just cut the bottom off and leave the top screwed on the top and just stick that into the dirt around the plant, and it works great. And just like a cheap little cloche.
I'm here in Florida. We actually have kind of the opposite problem. because in the summertime, it's too hot for things to grow. And so we actually have our best growing season during the winter. And I tend to, I've lived here for 12 years, but I grew up in California. I gardened in California. I'm still not used to Florida. The best time for us is really right now to be, if you get things, don't get your things in the ground, like in January, that's it. You're not going to have enough growing season before it starts getting too hot that everything bolts. So,
in Cuba, what they do is they make hothouses, only they're made with white plastic or white cloth over a frame.
Yeah.
There are some sites on the internet where when Russia pulled out of Cuba, those people were left with no food supply because Russia had been bringing them food.
Right.
And the people had to get very creative, and so they started making these different ways. They had community gardens, and they did all kinds of stuff. And one of the things that they did was they made garden, they started growing their food. Instead of wanting the sun to come in, they cut the exposure of the sun by using like white kind of a cotton, like a muslin or, kind of a canvas or something.
Oh, what a great idea. So what you're doing is making like the reverse of a greenhouse.
Right.
Like, yeah. Instead of trying to concentrate heat in the greenhouse, then you can concentrate the coolness or not bringing so much sun in so that there's not so much heat. You know, I think that I should try that this summer because in the past I've gotten frustrated because after a few months, like I can grow really good cucumbers here. I can grow tomatoes. Herbs grow really well. And then it gets to be summer and it's too hot for everything. So I do have some raised beds. I could just put a little frame over it and do something cool like that.
Yeah, just there are types of cloth that you can purchase which are permeable. The air can flow in and out of them, and they will reflect a certain amount of sunlight, and that cools it off. But anyway, I wanted to get back to the last thing you can use to where to grow, and that's just on your windowsill, somewhere where there's sunlight coming in. And also, you can make a table somewhere and put a grow light over it in the house or in the basement or something. And that will start you off with your gardening. And then when it gets warmer and the soil, the dirt in the garden is like warm enough that you can get a trowel or something into it, then you can start planting. But that, there are two kinds of plants, right? There are cool weather and hot weather plants.
And we'll talk about those when we come back from the break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Diane Dirks, extremely experienced organic gardener, and she's telling us how to start seeds for spring and summer harvest. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Diane Dirks, and we're talking about starting seeds. Diane, what were we talking about before the break? Cold weather and warm weather plants?
Yes. There are cold weather plants that can go in now, and they're mostly in the cabbage family, cauliflower, broccoli, Chinese cabbage, kale, mustard greens. All those are in a plant family called the brassicas, sometimes called cold plants. They have a bunch of names, but anyway, they're basically your broccoli plants. And then all the lettuces and a lot of the greens and most of the onions, garlic, that sort of thing, all do quite well in cold weather. Swiss chard, carrots, beets, your root vegetables, rutabaga, parsnips, that sort of thing. They do quite well in the cold weather. You can't obviously stick them in the frozen ground.
Right.
The soil has to be workable. But once your soil is workable, it doesn't have to be frost free. Usually, in a garden book or if you go online and check out different zones, they're called gardening zones. There will be zones based on how cold it can get. And each zone usually has a date at which the last of the frost appears. And then if you wait like a few days after that, you're pretty safe in putting your cold weather vegetables in there. But some of them you can put in even sooner than that. I mean, my broccoli just it doesn't seem to bother it at all. Or parsley, for example, that just does great in cold weather.
And it, you know, my parsley, I have a lot of pots where I have my herbs, and I planted some parsley that last year. And in the past, I've had to put in new parsley every spring. But this year, my parsley loved it in this pot, and it must have been in exactly the right place, because about a month ago, it just started growing and growing and growing, and it just is absolutely gorgeous and alive and just is spilling over the edge of the pot, and it just is extremely happy.
Yeah, well, it's in cold weather, so it likes that. And if you can keep it cool, you know, if you can find a, it's in a pot, and they can move it around and find a little microclimate somewhere where it's shaded and not too hot, it'll keep going. It just doesn't like withering sun. It doesn't handle that. But anyway, there are some flowers and stuff that you can grow, like nasturtiums and pansies and calendula also. And I like to put beans. I like to start beans, too, in late winter, because you can, they like coolish weather. They don't like it freezing, but they do okay if you start them in cool weather. And peas.
I was just going to say peas. This is the time for peas.
Yes, and that's any kind, you know, sugar snap or English peas, or even the flower sweet pea. You know, they just do great in this kind of weather. So what you want to do is, and you can also put potatoes in now and turnips. And then it also is a good time between, as soon as you can work the soil, any time up until like the end of March, early April, you can put your trees, your fruit trees, your blueberries, your strawberries, your small berry bushes, raspberries, blackberries, that kind of thing. You need to get those in the cool weather, because once it warms up, it's a little more stressful for the plant. So I recommend, you know, start your planning your garden now, so that you get, you know, call your nurseries, and if you want bushes and stuff, that you order them and get them lined up, so that you, as soon as you can work your soil, you can get that in the ground, and they will do well, as long as you put good, you know, you're putting good soil in there.
So, how do you plan a garden?
First of all, you start with what you want to eat.
Oh, that's a good place to start.
Some people, like me, I'm a freak for weird vegetables and plants. You know, it's like, oh, I've never heard of that one. I want one of those in my garden, you know. And then I actually grow it, and I go, ew, this tastes awful. Why did I put my garden space into this thing? But I really just am very adventurous. But usually I tell people when I'm consulting them that they like, if they really like carrots, put in a lot of rows of carrots. You know, they take a while to grow. And, you know, if you like broccoli or you like lettuce or you like, you know, any of these things, you need to make room for them in your space. There is a garden, there's a book in gardening. It's called Square Foot Gardening. If you only have a little space.
It's one of my favorite books. Yeah.
Yeah. You can grow a lot of food in a very small space. And that kind of gives you a plot, a mechanism by which you can grow it. But if you have lots of space, like I have 90 garden beds. Of course, a lot of them have perennials in them. I would say I probably have 15 big annual beds. I can pretty much put anything in there I want, but then I have to decide how much space I want to allot to each one. So I make a list, and I know which plants are winter and which are summer. And then there's also this other concept, which it's called companion gardening. Or in permaculture words, it's a guild, a plant guild. And all that means is those are plants that like each other, they help each other, and when you put them together, they do better. Because some plants, yes, they don't like each other. Like, you would never put an onion and a bean plant together. They fight. It's like you can almost see the little leaves out there rolled up and duking it out, you know. And neither one of them does well. So I wrote a book called Companion Gardening 101, and there are other books on the market. There's one called Carrots Love Tomatoes, which is really great, which lists these guilds or these companion family groups that like each other. And once you know what likes each other, you take your list and you separate it out into guilds. Then you decide how much space you want to have that guild. Like a lot of people, myself, I love lettuce. I love salads.
I do too.
And so a big part of my garden is salads, but salad greens tend to be low. You know, they're rarely more than a foot tall. And down the middle of my bed, I'll put the taller stuff, like the broccoli and the cauliflower and some of the kale, which grows, you know, 2 feet tall. I'll put that in the center so I don't have to step on my little, I don't want to step in the soil anyway because it compacts the soil. But
we need to take a break. I need to interrupt you. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest is Diane Dirksen. We're talking about organic gardening, obviously. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we're talking with Diane Dirks, very experienced organic gardener, about starting seeds for your spring and summer harvest. Diane, you've started these seeds. When do you put the seedlings into the ground?
Cool weather plants, as soon as you can work them. They are usually pretty cold tolerant. I would cover them with plastic if I knew that it was going to be really, really cold, like, you know, below freezing. But if it's just going to be frosty, I would just put them in the ground and maybe cover them with a little bit of plastic until it got up just a bit warmer. And then later, you know, you want to get your winter, your summer stuff started too. I have cold frames, and I just leave them my hot weather plants, like tomatoes and things like that, in there until the soil reaches about 65 degrees, and I know all manner of frost has passed. And usually in our area here, we're in zone 8. That's usually right around the 15th of March. Some of the farmers around here have their little ideas about, you know, what date, like Labor Day or something like that. But I just watch the Weather Channel because we're in the middle of this tremendous change in the environment, and none of the computer models are working. So I just watch the Weather Channel, and I keep my eyes open for that, you know, changes.
Well, I think go ahead.
One of the things that you want to do, though, is get enough of your seeds started that you want to put in the ground yourself, and make sure that when you're growing seeds that you get the kind that are not hybrid and they're not genetically modified. There are very few genetically modified plants, actually. They're just limited to like 8 or 9 different plants. Most of your garden vegetables are not GMO. But many of them are hybrid, and they do not breed true the second year. So when you're picking your seeds, make sure they're just an heirloom or a heritage variety so you can save the seeds and next year have the same plant. If they do well in your area, you want to keep growing them.
When I was gardening in California, I only bought heirlooms, but I also got seeds from neighbors, and we particularly had tomatoes that were just our tomatoes for our microclimate that had been growing there for years. And so I always say that if you're interested in starting seeds, talk to your neighbors, join your local garden club, because there's so many seeds that are local that people have been collecting, and you get those varieties that you're just not going to see anyplace else, and they're just delicious. They're just delicious.
This also keeps our biodiversity going. That's really important because we're losing our seed varieties really fast.
Yeah. So let's see what else. How do you make?
I don't think I finished answering your question.
Oh, please go ahead.
You want to let your plants grow till they have their second set of real leaves. When a seed first comes out, it has these little baby kind of things that look like almost like a puppy's ear, but they are that's not a true leaf. You want true leaves about maybe 2 or 3 inches tall, the whole plant, before you separate them out and maybe either transplant if you've got lots of seeds growing in one pot and you want to keep each seed and you want to replant them into some individual seed pots or something, you can do that. Or you can just know then when they're big enough that you can put them in the ground. But don't put your hot weather stuff in, like tomatoes or peppers or eggplant or anything like that, any of your watermelon, or they're called curcumin plants. They're the anything with a, like a big plant with a lot of seeds in it, like a watermelon or a pumpkin
or a cucumber.
Yeah, or cucumber. You don't want to put those in until the soil is at least 65 degrees. So you put your cold weather stuff in, you let it do its, make its food and everything, and then you harvest it when it's ready, and then you pull it up and leave a hole there, and then you might not even get them in until end of April or beginning of May, maybe even June before you start putting your hot weather stuff in the ground when there's a hole in your garden that you made from having pulled a cool weather vegetable. So there's something that's called succession planting, and you just you keep all your soil in production, because that way you get a greater yield, and that way, you know, if we're ever in trouble and we really need that food, we're not wasting garden space. That's the biggest, that's our biggest asset.
Yes.
Now I've answered your question.
Well, you know what? I really think that people should really understand that, because we have so much growing space. In like a typical town or even a city, I mean, well, a city like, say, New York City doesn't have a lot of like land space. It's pretty cemented. But people are growing in pots and greenhouses and things like that. I mean, there's space to put places to grow. In a town like I live in Clearwater, a suburban town, we have so much space. And everybody has a backyard, everybody has a side yard, everybody has a front yard, and there's just land, 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 and it's all landscaped. And so much, I mean, if everybody were to just take a quarter or a half of their garden area and grow food, we would have more food than we could eat. And we're just, instead of doing that, we are going to the supermarket and buying food that's been shipped in from other countries with pesticides on it. So we really need to be changing the way we think about this and providing our own food for ourselves and for our neighbors and giving our own. I mean, I read about Cuba, too. We were talking about Cuba earlier. And when they got cut off, all their shipment of food was gone. And they had to learn how to grow their own food. And we can learn how to grow our food before that point comes. We can be enjoying eating organic food right now. It's just a matter of changing the way we think, learning whatever it is we need to learn about what grows when and where in the place that we live, and getting into those habits of what we need to do in order to be, you know, watering and weeding and whatever it is we need to do to keep our beds producing, planting. Go get familiar with your local organic nursery. And just start learning to be a gardener. I think we all need to learn how to be gardeners and be growing our own food.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because one of my missions as a being is to enable people to become self-sufficient. So I have written a series of books that cover many of these subjects, which are short, concise. You don't have to wade through tons of inapplicable information. And one of them that I have, well, I've actually written two that are very applicable to what we're talking about. And one is called Starting Your Spring Garden Early, and the other one is called Companion Gardening. And they are available if you go to my email site. I don't have them right now on my website. I'm still growing my website, but it's didirks@comcast.net. And they're $9 each, plus shipping and handling. And they really give you, you can stick them in your back pocket and take them out to the garden. And when you have a question, or you read them first and then go out the question and say, what did she say about that? And you can flip open the page, and it's there. Because one of the things that I know about gardening is that there's a lot to know. And you can't all keep it in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, there are other books which are available. There's one on companion gardening called Carrots Love Tomatoes, and there's one on there's a bunch of stuff, really good books out there that you can go to. I believe in books rather than like Kindle or something, because I think you need, sometimes you can't take your Kindle out in the garden and set it down and have it rained on, you know.
Right. No, I agree. I like books, too, because if you have a book that has a lot of information, especially a gardening book, it's going to get pretty beat up in the garden. It's going to get wet. It's going to get full of dirt. And you really need to be able to turn to that page and pull the page over and highlight it and all those kinds of things and stick other pieces of paper in it. And what do you think about now? This is something that I've had a problem with in the past, is how do you keep track of what you're growing and learning about your garden from year to year?
I keep a log. Every year I put in plants, and then I go around afterwards, and I make a schematic, and I draw little circles where each kind of plant is, and over on the side I put what... Now, I'm going to use a word here, cultivar. A cultivar is a particular variety of a cultivated plant. You don't say cultivar about a wild plant, but you do say it about, a cultivated plant. Uh-huh. And so I know what I grew and which did well, because at the end of the season, I'll go around and I'll make notes about this did well, this did terrible, this died, this the bugs ate, right? And you just keep track of it that way. Sometimes you can do it on a computer, but I really like paper. I'm just kind of a paper lover. So I keep a log. And I tell my students and my consulting people that, where I build gardens for them or I'm helping them, mentor them, to always keep a year-by-year journal of what they did. And then Then you see trends, It's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. Another thing that just came to my mind was that once I saw a picture of, I'm going to say this real fast because we're almost out of time, but once I saw a picture that had, across the page, January, February, March, a little box for each one, and it showed what a particular plant looked like across the year. And so in January, it was just all underground growing roots, and in June, it was like a big plant that had tomatoes all over it. And I thought that was so interesting. Once I tried to draw what the plants in my garden would look like across the year, just so that I would have that awareness of how they changed as time went by. Anyway, thank you so much, Diane. We're running out of time. I really appreciate your being here. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and you can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com to find out more about Diane and more about the show. And come back tomorrow.